Okay, thank you. Okay, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us to learn together a little bit on this Erev Shabbos. As is our habit, I guess, we will do a first half hour of a Shaila that came up somewhat recently, and then the last 10 minutes we'll do a Dvar Torah on the Parsha. So I'll share with you two Shailas that came up not so long ago, and you'll tell me which one of these you would like to discuss. So Shaila number one is as follows. Both of these are Shailas that I've mentioned in previous Shiurim, but they've never been voted in. So now hopefully one of them will get voted as the Shaila. Well, one of them will have to be voted as the Shaila to discuss. So Shaila number one was as follows. I was on a plane a little while ago, and I got a text from a Talmud of mine who said, Rebbe, can you speak? And I said, no, I'm on a plane, but, what's the matter? Is everything okay? And he said, well, I have my nephew's Pidyon HaBen coming up, and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, I just discovered, are using a Kohen who is questionable. So I said, what do you mean the Kohen is questionable? So he said, well, the Kohen happens to be married to a Grusha, to a divorced woman, and that's who they're using for the Pidyon HaBen. So I said, well, why on earth would they use that Kohen who's married to a Grusha of all Kohanim for a Pidyon HaBen? He said, because my sister-in-law's mother is the Grusha that this Kohen is married to. So they figured they'll keep it in the family. So it's a sister-in-law's stepfather. So she figured she might as well use that Kohen for the Pidyon HaBen. So the Shaila is, is that a valid Pidyon? And B, if it's not, what's my responsibility to try to put a stop to that? How do I handle that situation? So that is Shaila number one. Shaila number two was from a fellow in my shul who sent me the following email. He writes, "Hi, Rebbe Leibowitz, I hope all is well. I have a client whose two favorite hobbies are hunting and drinking bourbon, hopefully not so much at the same time. I get emails from a website that sells liquor, and as luck would have it, they have a venison-flavored whiskey. I thought this would be a perfect gift for my client, or at least a unique gift. My client is not Jewish. I'm not sure if the venison is actually in the whiskey. It seems like they're just using the smoke from it to flavor the whiskey. It definitely sounds a bit off-putting to me, but getting more business from this client does not sound off-putting at all. Interestingly, the same distillery makes a bourbon flavored with secretions from the castor sacs in the beaver's anus. So I'm actually going with the more conservative choice over here. Anyway, just wondering if it's okay to buy a bottle of the venison whiskey for my client. Thank you." So, first of all, you got to admire the effort in formulating a shaila. That's well done. He made my job easy over here. But let's figure out which one of these we want to talk about. Do we want to talk about, of all Kohanim to use, why would you use the Kohen that's married to a Grusha and what your responsibility is? Or do we want to talk about whiskey from a beaver's anus? Do not vote for that one just because you want to see what it looks like on YU Torah to have a shiur titled Beaver's Anus. So let's see what are people voting here in the chat. So when we have 10 votes, please feel free to use the chat to vote. 2, 1, 1, 2. I guess I didn't count. 2, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 1, 1. Oh boy, it's close. Yeah, I think it's even. Okay, so that was the breaking vote. Now is for one. Okay, it's very close, but I think the Kohen Shaila wins by someone voted twice because they really want that Shaila. Okay, three times. Okay, so I think the Kohen Shaila wins despite the same person voting three times for the other one. Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Shaila of the Kohen and the Pidyon HaBen and whether he is disqualified from serving as a Kohen in the Pidyon HaBen. One second, let me just There we go. Okay, so here's how to approach this shaila. First thing we need to know is where did this come up in Shulchan Aruch of what happens to a person's kahuna when they disrespect their own kahuna by violating one of the basic halachas of kahuna. Meaning there is a basic halacha, it's a pasuk in the Torah, that a kohen is not allowed to marry a divorced woman. I remember I was once in a shul and a rabbi mentioned this halacha, and an elderly gentleman came over to the rabbi afterwards and he said, "Rabbi, I'm very offended that you said this thing that a kohen is not allowed to marry a divorced woman." And the rabbi said, "Well, why are you offended?" He said, "Because you made it up. It's not true." So the rabbi said, "No, I'm pretty sure it's true. I'm pretty sure this is like a psukim in the Torah." He said, "No, it's not true, and it's not a problem. And a kohen is allowed to marry a grusha." I have no idea what the guy was thinking and why he insisted that that was the case. But the rabbi was obviously correct. A kohen is not allowed to marry a grusha. So the question is, once we know that a kohen is not allowed to marry a grusha, so what does that do to his kahuna? So there is a Mishnah in Meseches Bechoros, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Zayin, Vanosei Noshim Ba'Aveira, Pasol Ad Sheyidor Hana'a. It's talking about a kohen who became pasul to do avoda in the Beis HaMikdash if he marries a woman that's asura to him. And it says that this, in fact, pasuls him from avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, which is the primary benefit of kahuna, is that you get to do the avoda. So a number of the Rishonim do not mention this psul legabe birchas kohanim, and the Beis Yosef and Simon Kuf Chav Ches, which is the simon about birchas kohanim, tries to be masbir why they wouldn't say that he's also possible to do birchas kohanim. So the Beis Yosef quotes a Mari Abuav who says that Taka, a kohen who marries a grusha, is possible birchas kohanim. He writes Shari Bekol Sha'a Omid Bemerdo. So long as he remains married to that woman, he's rebelling against his kahuna. So how can you then have him function as a kohen? None of the Rishonim say beferish to be matir. So there are Rishonim that say beferish to aser, and there are Rishonim that just don't mention it as far as Birch Kohanim is concerned. So this is where it actually comes up in Shulchan Aruch. Obviously, for Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, it's not going to come up in Shulchan Aruch. So it comes up in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Birch Kohanim, in Simon Kuf Chav Chesif Mem. Shulchan Aruch writes, Kohen Shenasa Grusha Lo Yisa Kapav. The ain nogin bo kedusha afilu likros patar rishon. Shulchan Aruch then adds that if a kohen marries a grusha, not only can he not duchen, he can't get the first aliyah. Vafilu girsha omesa, and not only that, even if he then divorces the woman or the woman drops dead, so he's not married to the woman anymore, pasul at sheidor hanoa al das rabbi me'anashim shu asr bam, until he makes a commitment, a public commitment, that he's no longer going to be with women that are asura to him. Meaning, he once he's so publicly and clearly disregarded the kedushas kahuna, he has to do tshuva in order to be able to regain his rights as a kohen. And how do you do tshuva to regain the rights of a kohen? He has to make a very public declaration that he is not going to violate this anymore. Now the question is that a real din or is that just like a knas? So, you know, when it comes to other averos that a kohen violates, he does not become possible to be ol l'duchan. In this case, marrying a grusha, he does become possible. So the Chasam Sofer writes in the Tshuva in Chel Gvav Simnir Beis that this is not a knas, this is a real psul mida oraisa. Primogadim has the following suffix, though. I should have added, there was another detail over here I forgot to mention. My Talmud said to me, "I'm not 100% sure that they're actually married, but they definitely live together. You know, daven in Orthodox synagogue, keep a kosher home, keep Shabbos. People are funny, you know." And he says, "So I'm not sure that they're actually married to each other, but they definitely live together. So does that make a difference? Meaning, if they're not married, does that make it better? Because now he's not married to a grusha." So it's interesting. You would think, you know, the isser is an isser bia with a grusha. It's not only an isser to marry a grusha. So you would think it really shouldn't make a difference. So Prima Gadim points out from the Lashon the Shulchan Aruch, it says that if a kohen is nasa, shenasa grusha, so Prima Gadim points out in Eshel Avram Sivkat Nun Ches, that it sounds dafka if they are actually married, he becomes pasul for a duchening and for the first aliyah. Whereas the basis of the Maria Buav, who was the basis for the Shita of the Shulchan Aruch, explained his logic was Shari Bekol Sha'a Omid Bemerdo, that every moment he's remaining in his rebelliousness, that it should be anything that's so said the dinim of Kedushas Kuna, regardless of whether he's married or not. If he's a Kohen who just disregards Tumas Mason, it should be the same problem. That he's puzzled to serve as a Kohen. So Prim Gadim's not sure. He leaves it as a Tzarech Iyun. He seems to assume, to be noted to the side, that there's no difference between a Kohen who marries a Grusha and a Kohen who lives with a Grusha. But if we're looking for a first sniff Lahakel, so first of all, by the way, just to be clear, we have not yet discussed taking Pidyon HaBen money, right? We've only discussed whether he's allowed to serve as a Kohen for Nisias Kapayim, serve as a Kohen to get the first Aliyah. So we haven't yet discussed Pidyon HaBen money, but the first crack in the case to perhaps come with a Tzad Lahakel is that maybe if they're not really married, he's not a Kohen Shenasa Grusha, and therefore maybe that would be better. But Prima Gadim seems very, very reticent to rely on that as a Tzad Lahakel. But then comes along the Binyan Tzion. Tshuva's Binyan Tzion, Rav Yaakov Etlinger, he was the Rebbe of Rav Shamshon Frel Hirsch, so I believe. So in Chelek Aleph Simen Vav, he's Mechadesh, that there is a bit difference between being married to a woman who's pasul and living with a woman who's pasul. And paradoxically, by not being married and living in sin, not being married, it's better than living in sin being married for this purpose. Where does he get that from? So the Shaila in Binyan Tzion was as follows. Shaila was, he writes, Kohen Echad, there was a Kohen that Kama Shanim Yiched Lo Bebeso Nachris, that he had a non-Jewish woman living in his house for a long time. V'yoshevas Imo, they live together, V'hu Imo B'yichud Ki'ish V'ishto, they function as a married couple, L'chol Davar. Gam Holid Mimena Banim Chalalim, and he's had children from this woman. U'bishot Nefesh Ratzal L'shamish B'kuna L'chol Davar. But he doesn't want it to cost him his rights of kahuna. He's particularly proud of duchening, so he wants to continue to duchen. V'likro rishon b'torah, to get the first aliyah. Im tzarich limchos biyado. Do you have to make a macha'a? So right off the bat, the Binyan Tzion says, L'chora, it's an afna halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that a Kohen who marries Nashim Ba'avera is possible from Nesias Kapayim until he's no dera na'a, so there's nothing to talk about. But then the Binyan Tzion says, Akati yesh makom iyun bazeh. Maybe there's what to talk about over here. And then he goes on to say that maybe there's a difference between being married and living with the woman. And he explains, Kivan shepakar kol kach lisa osa liisha mamish baze apostle achiyidar. Aval ba'ala baloni suin avikishar over aver shem and nifsal al yadan avodakum of worsham. Fascinating distinction. He says, you know, there's a difference between someone who has a taiva and does an avera versus someone who makes a religion out of his avera. You know, for someone who makes his avera a matter of principle, that this is something, you know, it's like Chazal tell us that why was Sodom destroyed? Not that they violated arayos, that they wrote ksubas for arayos, that they were writing a ksuba for relationships of arayos. Meaning it's one thing to say that I have a yetzer hara for arayos, I violate a yetzer hara, I violate avera because I have a yetzer hara. But for a person to then write a ksuba on it, for a person to then make a marriage out of it, out of the avera, that's a much, much greater level of chutzpah, right? That's, I think, the Lubavitcher Rebbe once commented about the conservative movement, that the problem with the conservative movement is not that they're not religious, it's that they made a religion out of being not religious, meaning, and that's about not observing Torah mitzvahs, and that's a real problem. That's it's a much greater problem. So the Binyan Tzion says it could be the Shulchan Aruch only possible someone who actually had that kind of chutzpah and to actually get married. And he points out that according to Rov Rishonim, even if he marries the woman, he doesn't become pasul. He says, after all, it's only a Maria Buav and a Rashba. None of the other Rishonim mentioned a psul to Duchen. Yes, in Shulchan Aruch, but that's only because most of the other Rishonim were silent on the issue, which is an interesting thing. I always wondered about that. Right? What happens when you have, you know, you have a thousand Rishonim, let's say, or 100 Rishonim, and there's an issue that comes up, and only one Rishon talks about it, and the others just don't say anything. So what do you assume? Do you assume, well, only one voted, and therefore it's a 1-0 vote, and that's it, like when you vote on a Zoom, which Shaila to talk about? So let's say you have 50 people on the Zoom, and only 4 people decide to vote. Right, so how do you take the rest of it? Right, what do you assume about the rest of the Rishonim? So what the Binyan Tzion is saying is the fact that the rest of the Rishonim do not mention anything is an indication that they hold it is not a halacha, that it's not an issue, that it's not a problem, and therefore Rov Rishonim hold it's not a problem. I just got a shayla this morning. Someone was running a tzitzis tying event tomorrow night for chayalim. So you wanted to know the classic shayla about whether women can tie tzitzis. Okay, that's been discussed. And Rav Asher Weiss wrote one tshuva, and then he wrote another tshuva where he backed out of the first tshuva, and different Rav Rimon wrote about it. Fine. The other thing he wanted to know, the Rav that was asking the shayla wanted to know, can they do an event at night, tying tzitzis at night? Because he knows that some poskim say you're not allowed to tie tzitzis at night. So I said, no post can really say you're not allowed to tie tzitzis at night. Meaning, everyone has the kasha why you're allowed to tie tzitzis at night. Meaning, they have a kasha that it's, if Laila is lav zman tzitzis, and you tie tzitzis at night when it's not the zman of the mitzvah, so why isn't it tasa v'lo menasui when morning comes? So that's a kasha in learning. It's a kasha in lamdus. So one of the post can say, and therefore maybe it's kedai to be machmir. So that doesn't mean that no one else talks about it, as a serious halachic issue, because it's not a halach anywhere. So if it's not a halach anywhere, so you assume that it's mutter. So Binyan Tzion takes a similar approach. However, the Binyan Tzion is a total das yachid in this shita. Prima Gadim does not agree. Chassam Sofer brings rayas from other Rishonim that it's an absolute psul d'oraisa, that there's nothing to talk about. In fact, in the Nesias Kapayim Kehilchasa, Peruchav Sivkan Chavchaz, he quotes that Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch, Asher's a Kohen who marries a Zona Yisraelis to be Nosei Kapav. And that's notable because obviously Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch is a Talmud of the Binyan Tzion. So there's no doubt that a Kohen who's married to a Grusha or who's living with a Grusha is not allowed to be Nosei Kapav. Now, what does that mean for Pidyon HaBen, right? Meaning, does that mean he's also not allowed to take the money for Pidyon HaBen? So there is a Gemara in Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Amid Beis. The Gemara says that Kala Machzik Petoras Hashem Yesh Lamanos Shela Machzik Petoras Hashem Ein Lamanos. Meaning Rashi explains it's referring to Chela Kuhuna. It's referring to receiving the Matnos Kuhuna. That anyone who is committed to Toras Hashem gets the Matnos Kuhuna. And anyone who's not committed to Torah Shem, like the chalakim of the karbanos that go to a kohen, anyone who's not machzik b'Torah Hashem doesn't get those. So there's a difference between, violating averos in general and violating those averos that define kahuna. Meaning, if let's say the guy speaks lashon hara, we'd probably still allow him to duchen. We'd probably still allow him to get the matnas kahuna. But if he violates averos that relate to his kahuna, then he forfeits the benefits of his kahuna. However, if he's not machzik b'Torah Hashem bichlal, he just doesn't observe Torah mitzvahs at all, it seems that you thereby lose the benefits of kahuna as well. So it seems that one of two ways to lose the benefits of kahuna, either he does things that are averos that directly talk to his kahuna, or he's just not observant at all. Now, in the Tshuvas B'Samim Rosh, in Siman Shin Pei Zayin, he writes that even if he just violates an Avera Midrabanan, Mizalzin Alaso Vein Manich Alaso L'Shum Dover Shel Chashivas Kuhuna, as long as he hasn't done proper Tshuva, nothing, no Kuhuna rights, even if he's Mizalzil in just an Avera Midrabanan. Now, we always have to note, whenever we quote the Tshuvas B'Samim Rosh, that the Tshuvas B'Samim Rosh is of murky origins. It was originally published as a tshuva sefer that was found from writings of the Rush, the great Rishon, the Rush. But then it was later discovered to be a forgery. Meaning, it's much easier to get people to buy your sefer if you claim it was written by a Rishon. I think they say the Chassam Sofer was one of the first people to catch on to the to the forgery of the Besamim Rosh. I think he used to refer to it, instead of Kisvei Harosh, he would refer to it as Kisvei Harosh, like the falsifications and the lies of the Rosh, meaning it's a lie that it is the Rosh. But anyway, the Pesach Yeshiva quotes Besamim Rosh all the time, so it is quoted by a lot of later Sfarim. Even like those who knew for sure that it was a forgery still quoted. Rav Avadia Yosef has a Mahalich where he says, if what he says makes sense, so then you quote it. If what he says doesn't make sense, then you don't quote it. So he quotes it all the time for the things that make a lot of sense. Anyway, the Knesset HaGadola in Yeridei, and some Shin Lamed Gimel Sifal, says that a Kohen who is in a forbidden marriage or is Metami L'Mesim B'Mezid should not be given any Matnas Kuhuna. So again, point one we said was that if a Kohen is married to a Grusha, it's a Afna Allah and Shulchan Aruch, he's not allowed to be Nosei Kapav, he's not allowed to get the first Aliyah. Now we said, okay, but what if he's just living with a Grusha? Binyan Sion says, oh, that's different. But most other poskim say, no, it's not different, it's the same. So that's point number two. Does it make a difference that he's married, that he's not married to her? Then point number three is, okay, but what about getting the Matnas Kuhuna? So what we've pointed out is that if he's not religious, he definitely doesn't get Matnas Kuhuna. And it seems that if the Knesset HaGadola writes explicitly that if he's in a marriage that's forbidden for a Kohen to be in, or he's Metamei the Mason, he also does not get the Matnas Kuhuna, and including the Matnas Kuhuna is Pidyon HaBen. So what do you do if he's the only Kohen available? Says the Knesset HaGadola, put aside the money and wait for a better Kohen. Meaning you don't do Pidyon HaBen with such a Kohen, even if he's your only option. Prima Gadim writes in Yeridea, in Simen Samech Aleph, in Mishpat Sozav, he writes this halacha, and he says that it's based on the halacha about Duchenin. So especially if you hold like some sort of that the Duchening Halacha is a Din D'Oraisa, then for sure over here it's going to be an even bigger problem. And many of the poskim who disagree with the Chassam Sofer and who think that the Din about Duchening is only a Din Midrabanan agree that it's D'Oraisa when it comes to Matnas Kuhuna, including Pidyon HaBen. That seems to be the Shita of Minchas Chinuch, Mitzvah Tav Kuf Vav, and the Mishnah Brura in Zimun Kuf Chav Ches Sif Katon Kuf Mem Zayin. So then the question is, okay, but what if you already did the Pidyon? Does it work? Meaning, this guy, look, he's not choosing the Kohen. It's his brother-in-law and sister-in-law that are choosing the Kohen. So, do I have to worry, he wants to know, that my nephew is not Padui, that that he doesn't have a Pidyon? So, would it work? So, I have a Sefer, two-volume set, called Otzer Pidyon HaBen. You know, whenever I get a weird Pidyon HaBen, Shaila, I figure, okay, if, you know, that's where you'll find it. You know, someone wrote an encyclopedia about Pidyon HaBen. He's got four volumes on Bris Milah, an Otzer Bris Milah, and only two volumes on Pidyon HaBen, but two volumes on Pidyon HaBen is enough, right? You'll find everything there. So in the Sefer Otzer Pidyon HaBen, he thinks that it all depends whether his disqualification is D'Oraisa, like the Chassam Sofer holds, or whether his disqualification is only a Knas Midrabanan. Meaning, this issue of whether the Pidyon works b'diavad depends on whether the problem in doing the Pidyon is a problem Midoraisa or only a problem Midrabanan. If it's only Midrabanan, it could be that it's a Knas that we don't allow him to get the Pidyon HaBen money, but you're Yotze if you do it. Meaning, if you did the Pidyon HaBen with him, that it would work b'diavad. However, in the Tshuvas Maisa Avram Yeridea Simun Chav Beis, who is the Tshuvas Maisa Avram? I do not know, but the Otzer Pidyon HaBen quotes it. And he says that it's quoted in Darkei Tshuva. Darkei Tshuva, we know, is the Munkacher. Rav Shachter always points out Darkei Tshuva is a collection of halachos that come up in Tshuvas Svarim that are organized based on the Shulchan Aruch and Yeridea. But the Munkacher didn't really write the whole thing himself. He made it a project of the whole yeshiva, of the whole Munkacher yeshiva. So he assigned each Talmud a different couple of se'ifim to do the research on. So Rav Shechter, I never would have noticed this, but Rav Shechter said, if you look through Darkei Tshuva, you'll see that some of the se'ifim are much, much stronger than others. Some of the sections are much stronger than others, because in any yeshiva, you're going to have bachrim that are better in learning and bachrim that are not as good in learning. So since it was a project, it was a collaborative project of the whole yeshiva. So sometimes they have stronger, sometimes they have less strong. Rav Shechter, I do see, uses the Darkei Tshuva a lot. When he paskens halachas in Yeridea in the OU office in Hilchos Kashrus, I've been privileged to be with him a few times as he deals with those things, and I've seen that he consults with the Darkei Tshuva a lot. But anyway, the Darkei Tshuva quotes a Tshuva's Maisa Avram, that if you had no idea that the guy was a Balaveira at the time that you did the Pidyon, then the Pidyon works. But if you knew that he was a balaveira and you did it anyway, then it doesn't work. If that's the case, it might be better not to tell the brother-in-law, because right now he doesn't necessarily know that it's a problem. The brother-in-law is obviously somewhat ignorant. So if he doesn't know that this is a problem, so then maybe that will impact the pidyon. I'm not exactly sure, what the raya is that this chilek exists, that if you know that he's a balaveira versus don't know that he's a balaveira, but if this is the case, it might be better not to tell the brother-in-law. Especially since if you tell him, he's likely going to use that kohen anyway, which always gets into the issue of, do you say mutav shiyushogin valyu mazidin, that a person's going to do something improper, but if he's going to do it anyway, even if you correct him, so should you or shouldn't you say something, right? Someone asked me, a Rebbe in a very modern Orthodox high school said that all the kids in that high school go to Atlantis for winter vacation, and without parents. And he said, it's absolute, I'm sure they're doing mitzvahs ma'asim tovim all day and all night there. And he said that one of the students who's more observant asked whether there's an Eruv, because they're going to be there for Shabbos. So he knows that there's no Eruv where they are. So Shaila, should he tell all the students that? He said, if he tells all the students that, most of them will not care. Haraya, everything else that they're doing on that trip. So do you say mutav shiyushogin volume is it? Okay, a different shayla for a different time. Question is like, what's the benefit of saying something? Meaning, what are you going to accomplish? So what you can accomplish is a very big deal. Meaning, pidyon haben comes with a bracha. There's a bircha mitzvah on pidyon haben. So if the father goes ahead with this kohen, and you hold that it's not a valid pidyon, then he's reciting a bracha levatala. So, and that's a big deal. There are cases, pretty much every major posek in the 20th century has a tshuva in the following shaila. A woman becomes a balas tshuva, and in the past she had been pregnant and had either had an abortion or something like that. And she now becomes a balas tshuva. She meets a nice, frum young man, and they get married, and she never tells him about her past pregnancy. In general, it's probably wise not to go through every detail of it. You marry a balas tshuva or a balas tshuva, that there's some sort of history. It's not always so healthy to know the details of every single point in that history, right? It's not always necessary to share all of those things. So she thought that if she tells her husband that she's been pregnant before and that she had an abortion, he will not be able to handle that. Their marriage won't be able to handle that. It's going to be a tremendous, tremendous strain on shalom bayis. But her problem is, now she's pregnant and she has a baby, and then she's having a baby boy. And it's her husband's first baby, and as far as her husband knows, it's her first baby. So the husband's going to want to do a pidyon haben for this baby boy. So what do you do? Can she allow the husband to do a pidyon haben, knowing that she had a late-term abortion that the husband is unaware of, and that that this baby is not really a petarechem? So this shaila, Rav Vadi has a tshuva about this, Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva about this, lots and lots of poskim have a tshuva about this. I remember my Rebbe Rav Silver from Karen Biavna said that someone once asked him this shaila, and he said that he knew the answer immediately, but he didn't have the guts to say it, so he sent them to Rav Scheinberg, and then Rav Scheinberg said exactly the same answer he was going to say. And what's the answer? That the Gemara Masechta Sota says that Shalom Bayis is so important that we're Mochik Shem Hashem, Mishnah says, that we're Mochik Shem Hashem for the sake of Shalom Bayis. So if you're allowed to erase the Shem Hashem for the sake of Shalom Bayis, so you can let the guy say a bracha levatala for the sake of Shalom Bayis if it's really going to destroy the marriage. I think what Rav Vadi writes is the better thing to do is to pretend that you found an ancestor who's really a Kohen or a Levi, to make it a suffix that maybe it doesn't require a pidyon haben, and then tell the guy to do a pidyon without a bracha or something like that. But Rav Silver pointed out at the time, but you see that how big a deal a bracha levatala is, that people are willing to, to ask a shaila that could ruin the whole shalom bayis just based on what? That the guy's going to say one bracha levatala? Yeah, because a bracha levatala is a really big deal. So that's the reason to say something over here, is to save the guy from bracha levatala. And the perhaps even more fundamental reason is to make sure this baby gets a pidyon. Meaning the baby's going to need to be niftes one way or the other. So at the end of the day, I think the psak is that if they're not going to listen to you, and there's an Orthodox rabbi, you know, officiating, so to speak, you should probably say something to the rabbi so that he could make sure the kid gets a pidyon. I mean, it's likely better to do one now than to try to remember to tell the child when he becomes a bar mitzvah. And probably that pidyon should be done by someone on behalf of the child, if the Aviyah Ben's not going to do it, prior to the pidyon that the Aviyah Ben does. Because once the Aviyah Ben does the pidyon, it's a suffik, whether that works or not. That's a machlokas aposkim. So you'd rather make sure that he's padui in advance, where you can actually say the bracha on the pidyon, where it's a vadai, rather than rely on the suffik. I asked the fellow what happened at the end. So he said that he said something to his brother-in-law, and he was told, oh, don't worry about it. They worked out something with the Beis Din. It's fine. And the brother-in-law has, my Talmud has no idea what that means. Which Beis Din? What was worked out? Like, who told him he's allowed to marry a grusha? He has no idea, but he didn't ask any further questions after that. So I'm not sure exactly what happened in terms of opinion, but they ended up, in fact, using, sadly, they ended up, in fact, using this Kohen. Okay.